Committee on Transportation, this Monday, February the 28th, 2005. And I want to welcome everybody here this afternoon. This is an exciting time. It'll be our last public hearing on Senate Bill 71. And before that, we're going to talk about House Bill 2067, which has been requested by the Department of Aviation to stagger the members of their board. And I believe that we have Bob Hidley here. Would you like to come to the table? And if you just want to tell us a few reasons why, what the situation is now, how your committee members, what terms they serve. I presume you want to keep some kind of historic memory on the board at all times. So,
yes, the problem right now is that they serve four-year terms, but they all expire at the same time. So when the current terms, if we continue down this road, when the terms are up, we will lose, unless somebody was reappointed, we would have all new people on the board with no corporate memory of how of the procedures, what happened in the past. It would be really chaotic. We wouldn't have any experience, any overlap of from one board to the next of the projects we were working on. The experience the board members gained, it would be lost when all new people came on, that kind of thing. So we're very much in favor of the idea of having staggered terms so that the new board members could be trained by the older board members on the projects, problems that we have. We would just do a lot better job for the state if we could have staggered terms.
Oh, sure. Questions for Mr. Hidley on House Bill 2067? Anybody? No. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2067, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2067. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Just for the further record here, House Bill 2067, we have received a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the measure. As was discussed, it would stagger the terms and it would further declare an emergency effective on passage. It passed off the House floor with all 55 members present voting yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Judith. Senator Whitson.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2067 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Whitsett moves House Bill 2067 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Senator Metzger? Senator
Zanski? Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator
Whitsett? Aye. Who would like to carry it?
I think Senator Whitsett.
Senator Whitsett? All right. Very good. Thank you.
He beat me to it.
He beat you to it. All right. And now I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 71. And as soon as I get my list, I will start calling people up. All right. All right. I have Mr. Hidley, but you did not want to. Did you want to witness at all on Senate Bill 71?
Yes, we did.
You did. All right, then come forward.
He's just here.
So. State your name and city in which you reside for the record, please.
I'm Bob Hidley. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Aviation, and this bill is really very important to us. We have a need for airport economic development and improved air service, and that results in improved business climate for the state, which means more jobs. Businesses in the state need air service to get their customers, employees, and freight to and from their locations. So it's really critical to have good airports in the state and the air service that goes along with that. So what we would do to maximize the impact of these of this bond issue is first work with the FAA to hopefully get additional grants. FAA funding can match up to 95% of local funds for eligible projects. That means that every dollar that we spend can get up to $19 in return. So that's really pretty important. They give priority to runways and taxiways for their projects. So if there was a project at one of our airports, for example, rehabilitating a runway, and we currently didn't have enough FAA funds to complete that project, if we have additional matching funds, we might be able to get additional grants from the FAA. So we'll be able to multiply the bond money maybe several times in some areas. For example, we had two airports in Oregon last year that actually had to return federal grants because they didn't have enough local matching dollars. So some of this bond issue funds could be used so that we get every dollar of FAA grant money that's available. We did that. None would be returned because of a lack of local matching funds. That's very important. There are also, for example, one airport, Pendleton, there's an FAA rule that an airport that has more than 10,000 employments or people getting on airliners every year, they automatically get $1 million from the FAA every year. In Pendleton, it dropped below 10,000, so that $1 million dropped down to $150,000 from the FAA. So they really have funding problems now because they've lost a lot of FAA dollars due to that rule. So some of that bond issue maybe could go to help out airports like that. Some projects, even though they're eligible for FAA funding, they're not fully funded because the FAA has a priority system of, as I mentioned, runways, taxiways first. Other projects, for example, airport terminals, only part of the terminal would be funded to begin with. It usually works out to about 30% or so is eligible for FAA funding, not the entire building. But since it's a lower priority, the FAA may not fund even an eligible project. So some of the bond money could be used for projects that otherwise wouldn't be funded due to a lack of FAA dollars. One thing we're doing with our airport board, we're starting a Air Service Economic Development Committee to help work on this issue. And they would have a process in place to quickly approve aviation projects as they came up so that we could get the money funded, get the project funded underway in a minimum amount of time. That's very important, too. And the last thing I'd like to say is that we would do our very best to maximize the funds so that we could get as many additional FAA grants as possible to multiply the effect of the bond money more than just what is initially, which is initially funded. That would have the greatest impact on economic development and job creation that we could do.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hibbett. That is so disappointing when you have to return an application that way when you just don't have the money and are able to get the matching funds. I've had that experience, and it's a tremendous disappointment.
But it could be good for us, too, because I've already talked to the FAA, and if they know we have this funding, this money sitting here, and some other state, and different state, the airport has to return funds because of a lack of matching funds or non-compliance issue or something, we're ready to take that money from them. That's how we get additional funds into our state.
Senate Bill 71 says that your department will look at the projects, and but the final say will be with the Oregon Transportation Commission. Are you supportive of that?
Yes.
All right. Other questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has your department had any opportunities to kind of put together a wish list? It's $100 million, well, let's say $10 million sitting on the table and for aviation aeronautics projects. What kinds of projects? Have you had any opportunity to put together projects from around the state for airports?
We did a survey of state airport managers and asked them what kind of projects are out there that aren't completely funded at this time, and they sent back projects totaling about $45 million. So we have way more projects than even this $10 million would cover. And they're all different kinds of projects, from airport terminals to additional concrete work on airports. But all of it would improve the airports in our state.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, follow up.
Would it be possible for you to forward that to the committee? I'd be interested to see kind of where those projects are and you know what they were. And is that possible for you to forward that to us?
Okay, we can do that. I don't have it with me here now.
I understand.
We can do that.
Yeah,
sure.
Next few days as we deliberate on this, you know.
Okay.
Bill, I think that would be helpful. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Yes, Senator Whitson.
Sure. $45 million, are a number of those a project ready to go?
Some are engineered and some are not.
Okay.
But if they're not, some of them are ready to go right away, some are not. It just depends on which the project is. Some have to be engineered and you need funding for the engineering also, which is usually part of the grant from the FAA.
Put those that list together for us. Could you sort of segregate those into those that are ready to go right now, and those that may need some more engineering, and those that are just in the thought process?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, Maria Holt, Oregon Steel Mills.
Scotland. I'm not witnessing.
Okay. All right. Come forward.
Yes, I'm up.
Give us your name and city in which you reside, please.
Sure. My name is Scott Witt. I'm the Director of Corporate Transportation for Oregon Steel Mills in Portland, Oregon. First of all, I want to thank the committee for the consideration on Senate Bill 71. Oregon Steel Mills has a multiple facility complex in the Portland area. I have the pleasure of being able to oversee the transportation activities at our facilities in multiple states and provinces. One of the things that is very promising to me is consideration of this bill to address infrastructure issues that severely impact our ability to grow our business and deliver our products to customers. We use a multimodal approach, utilizing marine through the Port of Portland, rail infrastructure, and trucks. We move approximately 2 million tons of product a year, both inbound and outbound to that facility. And the constrictions on rail infrastructure provide challenges to us on a daily basis, of which Maria, my partner back here, lives with daily. We've seen other states take proactive measures and Canadian provinces to address these issues, so I'm very, very pleased to see us taking a look at this to help us be more competitive. We have recently announced the construction of a new spiral weld mill facility, which we are taking the production from our Napa, California facility and transferring it to Oregon, with a new facility to be online in the first quarter of 06. Again, that's going to put additional demands on the infrastructure, and anything that we can do at this point to improve that is a great benefit to Oregon Steel and our continued growth and productivity.
All right. I appreciate your being here today.
Oh, thank you.
And sharing with us.
Sure.
Questions? Any questions? No?
Okay.
You did a good job.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Delmer Hansen. Next up will be Terry Cleaver.
Thank you, Chairman Berger. Members of the Transportation Committee, my name is Delmer Hansen. I represent the United Transportation Union, and I live in Island City, Oregon, on the eastern side of the state. The members that I represent are railroad conductors, brakemen, switchmen, some locomotive engineers. I sit here with great interest and listen to the shippers that we haul their product. And as you can tell from all their testimony, there are some transportation issues within the railroad industry, and those are capacity constraints. The gentleman that just testified from the steel mills, you know, our trains sit out there waiting to get into Portland terminals, and it's not just the steel mills, it's grain, it's containers, it's automobiles. The list just goes on and on. As a person that rides on trains daily, I can testify that it's not just the Portland area. Every major terminal that we work in and out of has some type of capacity constraints. And I see this bill as being able to galvanize a lot of our transportation issues together in small incremental segments, probably. Railroading and changing trackage and that type of thing is very expensive. And on top of that, traditionally, railroads don't particularly care to take public money, because along with that comes a few strings attached to those things. And, of course, they're private corporations, and private corporations don't like a lot of strings attached, and all of us understand that. But when it comes to the handling and shipping of our commodities, it certainly would be nicer to get some of these capacity constraints taken care of. And it's vital to the economy of Oregon. And every corner of our state pretty much has rail access. One thing that the committee needs to keep in mind when it comes to railroads is that most railroads own the right-of-ways that they their tracks run on, and so they can increase capacity without putting an additional footprint in a community. In other words, extend a siding, build extra tracks and yards, that type of things, and I'm hopeful that they will buy into this bill should you deem that it's a worthy bill, and help eliminate some of our capacity constraints. And I just wanted to give you a labor person's perspective on how things are out there that I see them
from.
Happy to answer any questions.
All right, questions. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I have is, there's been a lot of information in the media about labor shortages in the railroads. From your perspective, do you see that situation improving?
In fact, that situation has improved. I would take a conservative guess and say that within the last year, the Union Pacific alone has hired well over 400 people in the state in the transportation portion. I know that the Burlington Northern has also hired a substantial amount of people, although you know, their trackage within our state is not as great as the Union Pacific's is, but they have hired also. Their problem with manpower was not as severe as Union Pacific's was. But the Union Pacific has hired a substantial amount of people. Most of those now are out there working. They're also bringing some new locomotives online daily to help with that. But, you know, in saying that, that still doesn't eliminate the capacity problems. We have the people to run the trains, and they're ramping up their locomotives to get them online. But it's still, capacity is an issue.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. It's nice seeing you.
Nice to see you.
All right, Gary Traver.
Thank you, Senators. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today. My name is Terry Cleaver. I'm the traffic manager for Columbia Grain International, headquartered in Portland, Oregon. Columbia Grain exported over 3.5 million metric tons of grain last year in 2004. That involved unloading 23,000 rail cars, 400 barges, and over 900 trucks. We probably could have done more. The business was there to do, but we could not get the product delivered because of infrastructure constraints, particularly rail. Other states have been more proactive than Oregon in investing in rail infrastructure in particular. Tom Hammond, the president of Columbia Grain, advised me just this morning that Washington State helped finance a project which will now allow one of our competitors to unload unit trains of grain, 110-car shuttle trains, that they previously could not do. For these reasons, I urge you to pass this measure. And again, thank you for this opportunity.
All right, questions? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cleaver, we will be looking at probably under the current form about $100 million that will be achieved through bonding some lottery funds for this type of infrastructure, which when you look at a statewide system is really not that much money. So it's incumbent on us to spend it wisely so that we actually get a result. So I'm curious if from your standpoint, if you were sitting here and you had this $100 million to spend and you had all these demands on it, what are some of the criteria you would use to make sure that these limited amount of dollars are effective in helping move goods and services?
Well, obviously, I would try to target areas that are perceived as bottlenecks in the infrastructure, not only in rail, but in all modes. One of the things that I've found over the years is that a problem in one area, and maybe even in a completely different mode of transportation, impacts the entire network. We're all interdependent. And also, I would look to see if there were matching federal dollars, obviously, to maximize the benefit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Senator Whitsitt's recognized.
Sure. Can you give us an example or two of bottlenecks that might actually affect Columbia Grain?
Well, currently, the yard that serves Columbia Grain is constantly, seemingly constantly, full of rail cars. I believe Oregon Steel also has a facility in this same area, and I'm sure they could vouch for me. So it's a daily struggle to manage to get loaded rail cars in, empty rail cars out, because of the capacity constraints of the yard, as well as the length of the tracks themselves. Most of the tracks in the yard that serve us are not long enough to hold a complete unit train, which is what the railroads like to deliver and what makes them more efficient.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Patty Iverson? Iverson Summer.
Thank you.
Have to get it all in there.
We let the other half have some credit, too.
Yeah.
I don't have a written statement to submit, so.
Okay, my name is Patrice Iverson Summer. I'm the owner of Global Trading Resources in Portland, Oregon, which is a customs brokerage freight forwarding company. Customs brokers and freight forwarders are the intermediary for international trade. And I have been in the business for nearly 30 years, have had my own company for the last 10 years. I've made that benchmark. I've also been past president of the Columbia River Customs Brokers Association. I'm a member of the District Export Council for Oregon and Southern Washington. And I teach a number of international trade classes for newcomers to the international trade arena through the Small Business Administration International Trade Division, and also work with the Oregon Economic Development Commission. And most recently have been participating in the Columbia River Container service project that's just come together in reaction or in response to the departure of two of our major carriers in the Colombo River, namely Hyundai and K Line. In my past experience, I found that international trade can be the panacea and the actual difference between companies in Oregon either making it or not making it. And Senate Bill 71, otherwise known as Connect Oregon, I would like to extend to be Connect to the World. And we have come to a critical point in our history where we either make it or break it, and the time is now. And Senate Bill 71 can be the difference between making it or breaking it. Namely, in publications, in all our trade publications, you may have read about the tremendous increase in international trade, especially on the inbound side, of cargoes coming into the West Coast. It's markedly noted that Oregon, or the Port of Portland, seems to be missing from that growth. The lack of container carriage into the Port of Portland primarily is due to dollars and cents. There are no more U.S. call carriers. No carriers have a particular vested interest or financial interest in coming through the Port of Portland. It's detrimental. It's been a detriment because of the depth of the river, because of the costs. Portland has been the most expensive port to call. We have had in the past, not so much now, the slowest labor. And it's an 8-hour trek up the river. We have two barge pilots. Oregon, on the other hand, has been primarily an export port, three times as much export as the import. Yet the revenues on an import container are 3 to 4 times as much as an export container. So what does the impact of that mean? It means that our exporters, with the diminished carriage, have fewer containers to put their goods into. So what's the solution? We have a difficulty because of the depth of the river and bigger ships that can't fully load. So some options have been given to having them berth out in Astoria. That's not really an option at this point. Another option is, Matt, what's happening to all the vessels? A lot of that freight that's causing congestion, severe congestion, L.A. Long Beach, now Tacoma, Seattle, is moving not just for those markets, but is moving intermodally to Central and East Coast U.S. ports. So the concept of investing in the infrastructure in Oregon could be an inducement to those carriers to look at a place where there is not so much congestion. Because when you're talking dollars and cents, a carrier is losing money every day it sits at anchor out of the Port of Long Beach, L.A. Now the congestion is increasing in Seattle, Tacoma. As a customs broker, we're on the phone constantly with carriers. Where's our container? The vessel discharged 5 days ago. The truckers can't get in there to pick it up. I have importers of frozen food products that have sat in the Port of Long Beach for as long as 4 weeks. Importers in the Midwest need their cargo on a just-in-time delivery. Their whole program is blown if it sits with congestion in one of the ports or another. Now, Portland doesn't have that congestion, so we are looking as a very feasible alternative for some of these carriers that have in the past overlooked us. Some of my customer client base are all small and mid-sized companies. If they are looking at increasing and which is coming, with lack of carriage, if they're looking at increased costs of transportation to move their container from Seattle, Tacoma down to Portland, adding on an additional $300 to $500 per container, that can throw them completely out of a competitive position. Then the final point of this is bringing in more containers for our export market. Our exporters are experiencing an alarming lack of equipment because it's not here. Container carriers do not want to leave their containers here because it costs them less to move an empty container back over to China than it does to keep one here longer just for an export load at a third the cost. So what do we want to accomplish? We want to accomplish direct call carriage with the incentive. We don't have the big market that LA, Seattle does, but if we could move cargo through the port in an efficient, economical manner, we could induce those carriers back to the river and not lose what we have worked so hard to gain. And we're also talking significant jobs. Right now at Terminal 6, we're having some slowdowns, lack of gangs. They can't schedule them on a regular basis because they don't have the ships to work. The Port of Portland has lost people. CFS stations have lost people. My customers will go someplace else. I can do business anywhere, but we live here, and I want to keep my office here. And right now, after many, many discussions with ocean carriers, people across the nation, particularly in L.A. Long Beach, this is one of the best alternatives that I've seen. So I would encourage you to pass Senate Bill 71.
Patty, how do you see Senate Bill 71 taking care of some of the problems you've just talked about? Because it is a long way, longer way to the Port of Portland. The ships are getting bigger. They like to go to L.A. They want to go to Seattle. How is Senate Bill 71 going to help correct this?
If we can build on the infrastructure, namely rail, and I've heard some discussion on rail in the past, and I would highly encourage that investments be for developing and improving the rail lines. There, not all the vessels are the Panamax vessels, but if we can encourage those smaller vessels into the river and move cargo that is destined to the Midwest as well as to the East Coast and encourage I hate to use the word promise, but I think you have to use the word promise. If we have a good infrastructure, and we have a good road infrastructure right now for movement from the river onto the road system. In fact, truckers that I know would far rather move cargo into Central and Eastern Oregon from the Port of Portland than they would through Seattle, just because of the road system. But if we could improve that movement from the terminals to either the road or onto rail in a systematic economic fashion, we can more than, I think, counteract some of the disadvantages, like the longer trip up the river. However, keep in mind, it takes 6 to 8 hours into Seattle by the time they come through the mouth into berthing. So, but they don't have to pay two bar pilots or two river pilot, a bar and a river pilot. So, in answer to your question, I think that focusing funding, especially towards the rail, would be helpful in the container mode.
You talked about Long Beach and some of your customers being there as long as 4 weeks. So, what is the cost analysis for that? In other words, why couldn't that be pointed out? I mean, obviously, people are in business not to just let their profit sit for 4 weeks.
Oh, it most definitely is. And every opportunity I have of encouraging my customers to route their containers to a different port, I certainly do that. In many cases, if they don't even have the choice, like right now, we do not have a direct call carrier into the port of Japan or any Japanese ports. So it has to come through another port. We did. K-Line was a direct call carrier, and we lost that. And yet, Japan is one of our largest trading partners. But wherever I can encourage them to use a different port, particularly Portland, I certainly do that.
All right, questions? Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, ma'am, you mentioned three things or four things that really caught my attention. First, you said that Portland was the most expensive port to call, I believe. They only have two bar pilots, the container cost differential, slowest labor, and actually I have a professor who's the second mate who drives container ships. And that's some of the same things that he was telling me. And certainly the need for more containers for export because the differential, it's kind of a linear equation. If you can take them back and refill them and get five times as much to haul them back as to leave them here stateside, they don't leave them stateside. So could you just develop that a little bit more, all those points?
All those points?
Yes.
All right. From the cost figures that I received most recently, for a vessel to call it, make one call, at one point cost a carrier $27,000 to come up the river. They have to hire a bar pilot to go over the bar and then the river pilot to navigate up to the point of berthing. There were the Port of Portland berthing charges. I know the combination was about $27,000 versus $8,000 into, I believe, Seattle and... I'm not sure what the other, 11,000, but we're almost twice as much. Now, I understand that the Port of Portland has made a lot of efforts in reducing those costs. Okay. So that's one bit of progress we have. Hanjin, the one remaining container carrier, has testified to the fact that their production, their longshore production, has improved tremendously. So there's some improvement in the time factor. It takes a vessel to get in, discharged, and reloaded. What were your other questions?
The bar pilots and river pilots?
Well, that was part of the equation on the expense. I can't tell you what has been negotiated as far as their contracts or labor costs. I'm not privy to those, but it's important that we have those people there and that we keep them working.
Just one more thing, and Dave suggested to me that the need for more containers was huge.
Yes.
You just simply can't export if you don't have something to put them in, and economics are such right now that they don't leave the containers for them to ship out with.
That's right. That's right. I have one further thing to say. I've personally spent a lot of personal years, making sure that Portland, that Oregon is a full service port with all the federal agencies in place to be up there on par with Seattle, Tacoma. We worked hard to get a customs management center. I personally, the day before my wedding, was putting in numbers so that we could get a Fish and Wildlife office here. So if we have decreased service here, I'm afraid some of those folks are going to go away. And in public perception, if you're trying to attract international business here to the state, they're looking to make sure that you have a full service customs and international federal agency set of offices here that can service them properly. And so I'm afraid unless we really put the investment here in the intermodal, encourage direct call carriers, that those folks are going to go away as well.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Iverson Summer, you have obviously a great background in this, and so your information is very valuable. You commented on the rail and talking about specifically rail infrastructure as being really key. And I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Cleaver. Mm-hmm. Understanding that you don't have endless amount of dollars, we want to target the dollars well. You've talked about cost of bringing goods into the port and out. We know about the situation in Long Beach and also in Tacoma, Seattle, where people wait, and if a ship's costing $40,000 a day just sitting, then there's a huge cost there. Or if they come to Tacoma and they spend $500 a container to come down here, I mean, there's cost everywhere depending on where they go. But for targeting specific dollars of the infrastructure, if, say, and I'm just making this figure up, so don't anybody in the lobby, you know, start getting upset. But there was $15 or $20 million that went into marine infrastructure for, you know, where do you think specifically, based on your experience, are one or more areas specifically that those dollars should go to make these problems mitigate some of the problems you've talked about? What are the specific things that you would invest that money in to make things better for international trade?
Well, not being a rail expert, I know how to move the paper, I know how to move the freight, but not knowing the physical part of the rail entity, whether it's the congestion in the yards, if we have to needing you know more rails or another thoroughfare, I'm not the best one to ask. But I'd certainly research it for you if it would make a difference.
But again, you see, if the rail, of all these different issues, you think would make the greatest bang for the buck?
To me, it would, because one of the marketing, the biggest attractions to this marketing plan that has been drawn up is the ability to move cargo via rail from the river inland, either by the UP or the BN. And so if that's in place, then we can legitimately say, yeah, we can do this. But we have to make sure that we're able to do fulfill our promise to the carriers, otherwise they'll be gone. Because they're owned by the Koreans, by the Chinese, by the Japanese, and they don't really care if Oregon wins or loses on it. But to me, that's where your money's going to go the furthest. Because if we can bring those containers in, we've got those containers for the longshore to work, we've got the containers here, because they're not only bringing the ones for the Midwest, but they're bringing containers for Oregonians direct into the river. Mm-hmm. And then you've got them here, you don't have to move them up and down, and so you don't have the additional cost. So that, to me, makes the most sense.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right. All right, thank you very much. Anna Spindler. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Anna Spindler. I'm representing Fujimi Corporation. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you today. I actually am representing one of the companies that Patty mentioned earlier. We are an importer of finished goods and raw materials from Japan. We're a Japanese company. Our parent company is located in Nagoya. And we opened our plant in Tualatin in 1988. So we've been there a little over 20 years. I've been with the company since 1996, and my role there is mainly in purchasing, and logistics used to be just a small part of my job. In the last, I would say, as you know, we're in the high-tech industry, so as you know, the high-tech industry, we've taken a beating in the last 4 years, and economics are very important to us. We used to be bringing in about 150 containers into the Port of Portland through K-Line. Those were both raw materials, as I mentioned, and finished goods. And we were taking some of the finished goods and directly discharging those out to some of our customers around the U.S. Now, since K-Line has left the river, we are bringing our cargo in through Tacoma. So we, throughout the end of this year's contract, we are able to honor the rates that we were paying when the cargo came through Portland. However, we have been informed and we know that those rates are going to be increasing when we renegotiate our contract this spring. And as Patty mentioned as well, those rates will be going up anywhere between $300 to $500 in trying to get the containers down from Tacoma. In addition, we've experienced increased time in getting our containers. And I also feel like we have lost some of the control over our containers, and because they are being brought in from a port that's not in our area. So, for example, if we were having a problem in any way with any of our customs documentation, our customs house broker, which is Global Trading Resources, was able to hand walk any of the paperwork if it needed to be down to customs. Now, I understand with remote filing that things are getting a little easier, but we like the comfort of knowing that it is in Portland and that it would only be a couple days before, if anything went wrong, at most it would maybe be a day delay or so. However, now with things coming into Seattle-Tacoma area, I also am looking at the uncertainty of port congestion, also with the cargo passing now into the hands of the rail and then into a trucker. We're also looking at a number of different spots where the cargo could get held up, and not only just when it came in smoothly, came in very smoothly to the Port of Portland and then was just trucked out to our facility. So I believe that the Initiative 71 is very important. We're the type of importer that the Port of Portland wants. We're bringing those containers in from Japan. We're also looking at reopening a facility where we will be bringing in another 100 containers per year, and we'd like to do that through the Port of Portland. So,
I have a question for you. What kind of finished goods do you bring in?
We are a manufacturer of powdered abrasives and slurries for the semiconductor industry. So our goods are used way down on the food chain in making computers. So we are used for lapping and polishing on silicon wafers, hard disks, glass, metal. And we service some of the larger semiconductor companies here in the Northwest.
Senator Whitsett?
Yes, Chair Bridger. On the particularly on the two Panamax lines that have stopped calling, Portland and perhaps others, do you think that the economy is a major thing, danger in the river and the bar is a major thing, or inconvenience, or all of the above?
Let me see if I understand your question. So you're asking which factor do you believe that the containers left? Is that
why they left? Yeah.
Why they left? I think it was a different case for K-Line and for Hyundai as to why they left. K-Line has a terminal up in Tacoma, and they wanted to, I believe, use more of their existing facility in Tacoma. I think for Hyundai, they also have a terminal up in Tacoma, but they already had four West Coast ports of call that they wanted to call on. Some of the challenges Patty mentioned with the Port of Portland, with the long time coming down the river and with having to have two bar pilots and some of the costs. However, it was interesting, Hanjin, who is the existing carrier into Port of Portland, had said that they've had such good success with shipping containers from the Port of Portland into the Midwest, and working with some of the larger companies. Fred Meyer is a good example of a company who's been very successful at working with Hanjin and the Port of Portland to move their containers into the Midwest intermodally. I know that when I'm in Japan, I have our parent company as well as several of my suppliers have been asking me for various, you know, we've been talking a lot about K-Line leaving and how that was impacting us, and economically speaking, how that would impact our margins, because they're very thin after having such a rough couple years. And so they were asking, well, we have a facility in Chicago. Where would we, you know, we would bring that probably into what, Seattle or Tacoma? And I said, well, why wouldn't you bring it into Portland? And cited the example of Fred Meyer and how they were able to avoid the port congestion and things of that nature. I think to get back to your question, why did Hyundai and K-Line leave? I think they also had vessels that they wanted to get into the river. We've been waiting in Portland for the funds to dredge the river. That is finally coming through. It'll be completed, I believe, in 2007. But in the meantime, we don't want to lose any more vessels, containers, Hanjin. We don't want to lose Hanjin. Hanjin is also open. They want to have other container ships calling on the Port of Portland. There recently, I'm also a part of the Container Save the Container Service in Portland Committee. I don't think that's the official name of it, but in my mind, that's how I'm remembering it. And they had mentioned, you know, somebody had said, are you afraid of the competition? Do you want, why would you want K-Line here? They may take away some of your business. And they said, absolutely not. We want them here to sustain this business area. And I think by putting more money in investing into the rails, I think port congestion, as Patty mentioned, in Long Beach, and it will be in Tacoma and Seattle if Hanjin pulls out. And that's another concern for us as well, because we have very limited storage space. And therefore, I'm watching very closely all the containers that are coming in and timing-wise and my inventory levels. And if I have to now put in an extra slop of 21 days because it may get stuck in one of the ports, that costs us money as well. And so I'd have to keep another month's inventory or however long I think that we might have delays. So I don't have a concrete answer for you on why Hanjin and K-Line left, other than the two examples that I cited. I do think that there is potential for them to come back. And I think if we can put together a nice package to show them where Hanjin has been successfully able to import containers here, I believe the figures are that we're importing 250,000 containers and we're exporting 75,000. Or no, other way around. We're importing 75,000 and we're exporting 250,000. Most of those exports are, I think, 45% are going to Japan, and we're importing about 15% from Japan. So we're a part of that 15%, and we'd like to continue to bring it into Portland. So.
Just one follow-up. With K-Line and Hyundai, have they had terminals in Tacoma for a long period of time, or have they built them recently?
No, I believe they've been there for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure how many years, but I believe K-Line was expanding their Tacoma facility, and that's part of the reason they wanted to go back up to Tacoma.
Do you have a sense why they expanded their Tacoma facility instead of...
Well, they didn't really have a terminal here, and so I think... I don't really know, to be honest, and I wouldn't want to guess.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, appreciate your testimony. So, again, trading on your expertise, from what I am hearing from you, it seems to be an echo of what we heard from some other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly with the Columbia River, we can't change the length of the river. We have what we have.
Right.
But we have two other advantages, it sounds like, that are going for us. Number one, they're exceeding capacity in Long Beach. They're growing,
yes,
exceeding capacity in Tacoma. And the number one thing I remember reading in the paper, both about Hyundai and K-Line, is that they need to get their ships in and out. And they're looking at their 12-month schedule. And they could get a couple of more trips, transits back and forth. It makes a big difference. So mm-hmm. when they get a ship there, they want to get it in, they want to get it unloaded, and they want to get out on the next call. And one of the advantages that we certainly have is that you've mentioned is that if they come into Seattle, Tacoma, they still have to go south, I mean, for the railroad connection.
Right.
But we've got the highway, we've got the waterway, and we've got the rail here in Portland.
Right.
So when I hear you say, it sounds to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that, again, this seems to be the real key. There are certain things we can't do much about, but we can more than make up for that if we make the investments so that when they do come to the Port of Portland, their cargo will go in and out and not sit around.
That's
and that those
right.
would be the investments that we should really focus on.
Yes, okay. Exactly. The other thing that Patty mentioned that I also wanted to comment on is Hanjin had mentioned, you know, they were talking about their labor force and how quickly they were able to unload. They have 10 ports in the United States that they're calling on, or 10 locations, and they said that Portland was number 2 in efficiency. So there has been quite a bit of improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And there were representatives from the union there, also from the bar pilots, and, you know, they were able to give good testimony as well. And it's obvious that they want more work. And by having another container company here and by being able to attract that, having the infrastructure to be able to, just as you were saying, Senator, that making them feel confident that we're investing in the infrastructure to make sure that if they get the cargo here, we're ready. We can take it where it needs to go. And Portland is an attractive place, as you mentioned, to bring that cargo through. And I know that, Patty was mentioning earlier, that also they want to keep working, and to keep them working, I believe 11% of Portland's jobs are in the transportation and logistics area. And so, in worst case scenario, if we were to lose Hanjin, that would be severely impacted, because you'd lose all that all the containers, and not only that, all the importers in this area, we would be forced to go through Tacoma and Seattle. And then you could run into the worst case scenario where people are, the transportation companies in between Portland and Seattle basically can charge whatever they need to charge or want to charge to get the containers down here. And that's probably my biggest concern, is that we'd be in a situation where we don't have much negotiating ability to be able to move our freight into this area.
All right. We welcome Vice Chair Beyer from the House of Representatives. That's very nice to have you here. All right, Mike Burton.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Community Development Division Manager of the Economic and Community Development Department. And I wear a lot of hats over there. One of the hats I wear is I'm responsible for the agency's activity with ports, which brings me into an orbit with the transportation people. Additionally, I happen to be married to somebody who worked for ODOT, so I learn more about transportation than I care to. I bring that up because in addition to the department's roles with economic development, we are deeply invested in transportation. Our interests are particularly related to freight and getting people into and out of their jobs. As you've heard during these proceedings, there's already a problem. There's congestion in many of the freight routes. There are problems related to investment. Specifically, there's a serious problem related to rail investment. Our agency does have resources because of our interest in transportation to invest in publicly owned infrastructure, including transportation infrastructure. So we do get involved in ports investments. We do get involved in airport investments. It's difficult for us or for ODOT to invest in rail activities. And that's, as you heard, because the railroads themselves are primarily owned by large companies who are not the operators, the short lines specifically I'm speaking of. We can't make investments in, we can make investments for businesses, we make loans to businesses, but relatively speaking, they're small investments. Our large capital programs are targeted toward community-owned infrastructure, so there's a problem. ODOT's resources are primarily gas tax-derived, and therefore they can only make marginal investments in rail as well. So there's a problem. The problem is expected to grow. You've heard the transportation experts talk about doubling freight volume in the next 20 years. There's a debate about how quickly it will happen, but there's no doubt that it will happen. But one thing you haven't heard about, except in bits and pieces, is I believe there's a major opportunity. A couple of the last speakers kind of got to that, but there, the crisis in Seattle, Tacoma, Oakland, Alameda, Long Beach, someone described as looking, an aerial photo of Long Beach is looking like a yacht club with all of the large ships tied up at the docks waiting to get in. Waits of days or even weeks. These are large capital-intensive investments. The ships, when a ship's sitting there not working, it's a problem. That's actually one of the critical reasons why Hyundai pulled out of the Portland route. Because of growing trade with China, they need to maximize usage of their infrastructure, their ships in this case, and they needed to add routes, calls. They only have, they actually measure their circuits in days, not even weeks. So to add a route in China meant they had to drop something off. This is a small market area. However, as you've heard, we have important transportation links. The rail link through the gorge is a major advantage over the rail link over Snoqualmie Pass in out of Seattle and Tacoma, because the tunnels out of the Puget Sound area limit load heights, and you can't double stack containers going through those tunnels. We believe, I was at a meeting last summer where the Port of Tacoma and the Port of Seattle were appealing to Eastern Washington ports to create a strategy where you move boxes off the docks right away, get them into some place where there's lots of land, then sort them out and build trains and ship them out. I believe that that's not likely to happen in Washington because the east side ports in Washington are also constrained by land, as are the Puget Sound ports. There's no room to do it on the docks in Seattle and Tacoma, and there's no room to do it at Pasco, Kennewick, etc. There is room in Umatilla and Morrow. I believe there's a real opportunity in Oregon to move boxes out of the coastal ports, the river port in Portland, the river system, Long Beach, Vancouver, Portland, and get them off the docks in Seattle, Tacoma, move them to a place where there's lots of land and where there's transportation infrastructure. And I think there's an opportunity for you through this bill to make an impact on that transportation infrastructure. I believe that the real opportunity lies in those intermodal connections. Too often, I think, we're organized to look at particular the highway system or the port system or the airport system. I think the place where we need to focus on in order to make the biggest bang for the buck is with the places where those things come together, where you move material, the boxes off the ships and put them on the rail or on trucks. Additionally, I'd like to speak, I should look at my notes here. I do apologize for not bringing written testimony, but I've been sitting in on these hearings. I thought it was pretty much a done deal, but it was suggested to me that it was important that we actually speak up. So I came a little bit unprepared. But I think I've covered most of the issues I'd like to talk about. I think the bill addresses both the needs, the projected need, and the opportunity. Another thing we particularly like about the bill is it creates a working relationship between our commission, particularly, and the Transportation Commission. Has the commission making recommendations to the commission, the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission making recommendations to the Transportation Commission. We think that's a valuable link. In terms of criteria, I've actually been through this with the ports a couple of sessions ago. You guys approved a program that would allow us to fund channel projects for ports that were not federal projects. We sat down with the ports and sort of negotiated the criteria we would use there. I would put forward the need to look at multimodal connections. That would be the top of my list. But additionally, we looked at sorts of measures of use, like and we allowed for both freight and passenger, but we were looking for, in the case of for most of the Oregon ports, not counting Portland and to a degree Coos Bay, the primary activity, marine transportation activity, is recreational use. So we looked at days use. We looked at scheduled ship calls as measures. You could look at my priorities would be those sorts of measures of use. We did allow for projected measures of use, and we conditioned grant assistance on fulfilling those conditioned measures, which is kind of a tricky road to walk, because if they don't get the activity to justify the grant, then they're probably going to be in a tough place to make the payments. But I do think that those sorts of things will get to the places where you can make the biggest bang for the buck. I think it's important to look at the system, and in this case, not just the highway or the marine, but the nodes that interconnect them, and look at the whole thing and try to maximize the return you get on the investment in the whole system. To that end, I would comment that we are in the process of funding a regional marine transportation system strategic plan, which should be, we were hoping we would have something to roll out to during the legislative session, but we're just funding the thing through the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association, actually. So it's out of our control when it gets done, but the project is in play, and I'd be happy to present to you the results of that planning process when we do have them. With that, I'd stop and be prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mike, for coming forward today and giving us your testimony. Questions of Mike? No? All right. Thank you very much. Jonathan Shaluta? Is that close?
Very close.
Good.
And thank you. But for the record, my name is Jonathan Schlieter. I'm the executive director of Westside Economic Alliance, which is a business and economic development group that's headquartered on the west side of the Portland metro region. We represent the employers, the business developers, and property managers, as well as the local communities and public agencies operating on the west side of the Portland metro region. You'd know it as Washington County and portions of Clackamas County along the I-5 corridor down through Lake Oswego, Lake Grove, Tualatin, and Wilsonville. As such, with our 181 member companies and entities and 41,000 employees on the west side of the Portland metro region, we have a very decided interest in the transportation needs of the state of Oregon and the west side of the metro region. I'd like to leave the committee with three additional thoughts for your consideration here today. That is, first of all, that our organization unanimously supported Senate Bill 71 and Connect Oregon when our board of directors took that issue up last Wednesday. We recognize the need for an efficient transportation delivery infrastructure in the state of Oregon and feel that as there are bottlenecks and as there are areas of concern or problems, those need to be corrected. Senate Bill 71 does a nice job of that in two areas, and that would lead me to my second point. The rail industry particularly, and in this state that's pretty much limited to the Union Pacific and Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroads, have to compete within their own companies for shareholder dollars and capital to invest in their systems with other states and other projects and other modes of transportation across their service systems. And Oregon is a small state relative to our competitors north and south and to the types of infrastructure and types of freight that they are carrying. So other areas of their systems have been getting the capital in order to justify the return. The fact that this bill contains a local share and participation component is very key to that, because that allows the private investment and local component to draw dollars from the carriers and from the local participants into this process. It maximizes your return on those dollars, and that's going to be very key in the chase for dollars and being able to develop the infrastructure of these two carriers. That's very key, I think, in the support of this bill. The third point that I want to leave you with, and I guess in partial response to Senator Metzger's earlier questions about how do you as a committee and how do you as the legislative body view the effectiveness of a bill such as this in meeting the transportation needs of the state of Oregon, it would be simply this. This is low-hanging fruit. This is urban and rural benefit. This is east and west benefit. This is, you've heard it, from Island City and La Grande area to the Portland metro region and now to the west side. This is going to benefit the entire state of Oregon and the transportation needs of this state. And there are a few bills that come before you that offer that kind of benefit to all elements of the state. And I would see this as a very beneficial move on your part and for this legislative assembly. So we thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Any questions? No? We have a quiet committee today.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Mark Simmons.
Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. My name is Mark Simmons. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and the nursery industry is a real success story in Oregon. Number three nationally in production of nursery goods, the largest agriculture industry in the state with nearly $800 million in revenues, farm gate revenues per year, over 20,000 employees, and nearly 80% of our product is exported out of state. Freight to our major markets is becoming a great concern. It's primarily the eastern seaboard, Virginia North, and some of the Ohio Valley. That's where most of Oregon's nursery products go. Costs were escalating, primarily trucks, refrigerated trucks, and costs were escalating for those before the fuel prices began to go through the ceiling. And it is devaluing Oregon's nursery goods. Purchasers are asking for subsidies from our shippers, our growers, to offset the cost of freight to their retail locations. And we are looking at rail opportunities. We are looking at intermodal. We're looking at refrigerated boxcars, anything we can do to relieve some of the pressure on trucks. This measure provides an opportunity for Oregon to make some critical investment in rail that we believe would be one step toward that effort. We need, between us and the Christmas tree growers, over 75,000 trucks per year to move goods to market. It's a lot of trucks moving product out of Oregon. And if the nursery industry, quite frankly, is going to continue to grow and not retract in the state of Oregon, this problem must be solved and addressed in any way possible. And this, we believe, is an appropriate step, provides appropriate investment from Oregon into non-highway freight mobility, and we would offer our full support.
Thank you very much for that testimony. When we've had some testimony by some of the rail lines, they've talked about the cost being much cheaper the longer the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would fall into what you're talking about. Have you done a cost analysis with using the rail at a long distance?
Chair Berger, some of our members have done some intermodal. The refrigerated boxcars have other problems. We're learning to unitize our products that can be loaded with forklifts into boxcars and such. You can get three trucks volume into one boxcar. And we are doing some cost analysis. It is cheaper to do using intermodal to get the trailer vans back to Chicago on the train and then use local delivery to the East Coast, the markets, the nurseries that we deliver to. It is significantly cheaper, and I can get the numbers for you if you would like that.
Another question that just kind of fits into this, and that is, of course, we want the nursery business to grow. We don't want you to get smaller. And so how does that impact the job situation in Oregon, too? As you grow, surely our employment grows.
Absolutely. This is a labor-intensive industry. A lot of handwork, potting, repotting plants as they get larger, and then currently loading them into trucks one at a time. A lot of pruning and shaping, and it does provide many, many jobs.
Okay. Questions? Any questions, Mark? No?
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right. Are there others who would like to give us some information this afternoon? Anyone? Anyone opposed to Senate Bill 71? Things about it you don't like?
Well, look at that.
It's unanimous.
Whatever we want, they're happy with. I think that's wonderful.
That's what I'm gonna presume. All right, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 71. Members, I will remind you of our April the 1st trip. Won't be going out of town before April 1st, but we will be going on another road trip on April 1st.
April Fool's Day.
April Fool's Day.
Oh, I can't wait for the agenda.
So I know. Just can't. I'll try to accommodate our humorous member. We'll probably end up in the Willamette Weekly. And I see that for sure. All right. Is there anything that any of the members would like to say? Representative Beyer, thank you again for making the effort to come over this afternoon. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have been trying to keep track of what's been going on, you know, between appointments in my office, but it's much better to be here.
I know. Very good. Well, we do appreciate it. If there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
All right. No worries.